Hi, hello, welcome back to yet another amazing episode of Sustainability 101. I'm your host Pratiksha and I'm here with my co-host Pratik.
Hi everyone, hello Pratiksha. So guys, what's up? Pratiksha, it's so nice to meet you after so long. I mean, not so long, but yeah. So after listening to your voice and after listening, like after doing this podcast, I get such a flow of energy and it feels good to like, you know, speak on this podcast. So do you guys feel the same or do you feel the same, Pratiksha?
Yeah, even I noticed that. I think it is because we are passionate about the topic that we get so excited, right?
Absolutely. Take it from us, guys. If you are struggling to find what you're passionate about, just think what kind of topics makes you excited and pumped up. So you can just note those topics and like, you know, and prioritize them and just start doing or contributing or working towards them.
Yes, and if you find these tips useful, let us know by commenting on our Instagram page. Recently, we have been so active on all of our social media platforms. Don't miss out on a daily dose of motivation that would keep you on track in your sustainable journey. Great. So now let's introduce today's guest, shall we?
Sure. So as you all know, environmental engineers use the principle of engineering, soil science, biology, and chemistry to develop solutions to environmental problems. They work to improve recycling, waste disposal, public health, and water and air pollution control. So our today's guest is also a young environmental engineer who works in the Haryana State Pollution Control Board. He's very passionate about pollution control and climate change. He has worked closely with the district administration to coordinate various pollution control programs. We love a person who not only talks the talk, but also walks the walk. So let's welcome Hardik Sirwa, you guys.
Yeah, we are so happy to have you as our guest, Hardik.
Thank you very much, guys, for having me. It feels great to be here.
That's amazing. I love your enthusiasm. So let's dive straight into the questions, right?
Amazing.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So, like just a background about myself, Hardik, even I have done my bachelor's in civil engineering and now I'm pursuing my master's in environmental engineering. So I can like, you know, totally understand how your journey would have been. So with that, I'll just start asking our first question. So I got really excited when Pratiksha told me about you because we both have the same background, right? And being an environmental engineering student, so like what led you, I wanted to know, like there's a reason for me to get into this field. So what was the reason which led you here?
Well, Pratik, if you look at it, civil engineering is one of the original branches of engineering, one of the most ancient engineering disciplines.
Correct.
I remember like way back in 1960s when my maternal grandfather was pursuing his engineering in civil. It was a time when India has just became independent and they were like little to none engineering colleges in whole nation. If you look at it, civil engineering teaches you how to build, how to construct. But what it doesn't teach you is what to do with the footprint, the waste, which you create during the construction. In fact, almost all branches of engineering, directly or indirectly, teaches us how to pollute. It's only when the tenets of sustainability comes via environmental engineering that we come to realize that building is just one aspect. For a very long period in human history, we all just have been concerned about the creation of development. It's only been a tiny, minuscule fraction on the whole timeline that we started to factoring in sustainability. And during my civil engineering, if you being a civil engineer must be aware that a lot of discipline of environmental engineering actually originates from subjects of civil engineering.
Absolutely.
We have got water supply engineering, sewage treatment, then if you want to...
industrial treatment. Yeah.
Absolutely. And the environmental impact assessment, that even that plays a major role in civil engineering if you want to venture into it.
Yeah.
I have studied in the abode of nature in Himalayas near Shimla. And I used to always be a voice press reader and I used to read about this North Indian smog, the Delhi air pollution issues. But reading is completely different from experiencing it. I always have a bent towards environmental engineering, but it was only when after my engineering, when I shifted to New Delhi, that I realized how bad things actually are. I mean, reading about the smog after Diwali, is one thing, and experiencing it firsthand is something completely different. So that kind of cemented my belief. This is an arena which needs a lot of work upon. And in a nation like India, if you want to change things up, then it always helps to be with the government. That's what's propelled me towards this path.
Wow. Amazing. So I really like to, like, you know, hear what drives people to get into such fields. And once, like you said, like there's not much awareness and it has started to build up. I'll just like to like give you a quick trivia on the environmental engineering in the University of Mumbai. Like, you know, in the University of Mumbai, the closest you can, if you are an engineering student and if you want to do something in environmental, the closest you can do is civil engineering, because University of Mumbai doesn't provide a separate course on engineering called as environmental engineering. So imagine like how lightly they are taking this thing. Still, like, it's the need of the hour also.
Yeah, there are very few people. If you ask any class 11 or class 12 student that what kind of engineering do you want to do, then environmental will be like quite low in the hierarchy. People will start with computer science, IT, civil, mechanical, whatever it might be. But environmental, that still occupies a relatively lower space in the hierarchy.
Exactly.
And we can't exactly blame them. I mean, if you look at even the employment opportunities, it's still in its infancy. It's a need of the hour, but we as a society always have this tendency to put our short-term comfort over our long-term gains. This lacuna in us to not able to delay our gratification for the greater good has led to this situation that such an important discipline is not getting its due.
Yeah, and I feel really sad upon hearing those. I hope like... not just University of Mumbai, the places or all the universities in India should start, like, you know, increasing the awareness and the importance about this course and how like it has immense scope and what drastic change it can bring in this field of engineering.
Yeah, right. And I really like the point which Hardik has mentioned, that every student needs to be think about what is going on in the environment and they need to choose their right option for their career. So let's move on to the next question. And people often give lectures on environmental protection, but they lack proper information on environmental rules and regulation. In your opinion, is it important to have a good understanding of environmental laws for the better environmental management?
Well, Pratiksha, environment, climate change, these all have become the buzzwords, and they are being used by a big section of society as virtue signaling. People want to sound woke, so they put these terms in their, you know, conversations without sometimes even knowing the intricacies and subtleties. So yeah, I mean, it's always good to be aware about your environment, but just a superficial knowledge won't do you much good. In fact, I try to make it a point to always tell people the tiny ways in which they can contribute. And along with that, when we talk about the environmental laws, it's like if you are an aware citizen, you know your rights, then you can always exercise them in a better fashion. And the thing with environmental laws is that they have a lot of provisions which citizens can exercise as individuals to get their due. It might be solid waste management rules of 2016. Or it might be about plastic waste, or it might be about complaining against some industry that is causing a grave threat to the environment in the vicinity. These all provisions are available to the people. It's just that a large section of society is not aware about them, because we are never taught these things in the school. We are never taught what kind of right we can exercise in having a clean and green environment. In fact, Honorable Supreme Court in various of its judgment have given a wider interpretation of Article 21, the right to life, where they have explicitly mentioned that right to a clean environment is a fundamental right to every Indian. And most people don't realize is that the agencies that are doing your waste collection, for example, in most of the places, it's the municipal corporation. If you're in Delhi, it might be Delhi Municipal Corporation. In different cities, it goes by the prefix of that city and the municipal corporation. You can actually file a complaint against the municipal commissioners in the environment courts that are nearby to you. You can actually file a complaint in the Honorable NGT if you feel that some particular work is not being done in a proper fashion.
I was not knowing that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are not aware about that. In fact, there's this app by Central Pollution Control Board called Samir app. And via this app, you can see the live status of your city's air pollution. It gives you 24/7 updates. For example, my state pollution control board has installed multiple automatic air quality stations in all districts of the Haryana. In fact, we were the first state to have these air quality monitoring stations in every district and to provide transparent, unadulterated data to the people free of cost. And along with that, you can also lodge your complaints related to waste burning, waste dumping, industrial pollution on the Samir app. All you need is a smartphone, which almost everyone have. I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, I'm sure you have a smartphone. And you just need an active internet connection. That's all you need.
Yeah, that is really great. I mean, I was not aware about the Samir app too, but the information you have just given, that the laws and everything, and I think every individual person should know about this regulation, because we need to take care about our surrounding. And that was really honest answer by you, and it was great. I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
And people, please use Samir app. And if you are not aware about it, if you can find it in a Play Store, and I can right now in the Chrome, I just type the Samir app, and I really got a great overview of the app. So you must try it on.
Amazing, amazing. Nice to know. Thank you for sharing that, Hardik. So moving on. Like the people who are new, so I'll just give a brief, I mean, a short introduction about what are SPCBs, because my next question revolves around those similar lines. So SPCB are like the state pollution control boards in India, which are at various state capitals of the country to advise respective state governments to control and protect environment. They work with the rules which are framed by the state government as well as by the central government time to time. So my question to you, Hardik, is how can the state pollution control boards improve the waste management crisis in India? What are the things they are doing, and how does their future look like?
When we talk about state pollution control boards, I'd like to just give a little bit the legal background to the people. In 1974, India came up with its first environmental legislation, the Water Prevention and Pollution Control Act in 1974. So that act set up Central Pollution Control Board and State Pollution Control Boards. Central Pollution Control Board is like a research and development organization which is supposed to frame the laws, and State Pollution Control Boards are the regulatory bodies. I mean, if you want to think of them, think of it like a special force for the implementation of environmental laws. It's like you have got an intersection of the policing and the science and engineering community in the State Pollution Control Board. And when we talk about the waste management issue, currently there are huge gaps in the kind of waste that is being generated and that is being collected. And collection is just one tiny part of the whole equation. Once you have collected it, you are supposed to ensure that it can also be managed. Otherwise, what you see is that all these legacy waste sites coming up. You have got Panwadi in Gurgaon. You have got so many of these waste mountains coming up in Delhi. And they happen when you don't have a mechanism to further process the waste or treat it. So just your door-to-door collection and segregation are some of the aspects. The whole waste management goes way beyond that. You need to sort out the recyclable materials. You need to make decentralized compost or biomethanation plants near vegetable, meat, and fish markets. So it's a whole complex game. And unfortunately, currently, the different municipal corporations, barring a few, are not able to fulfill these roles. We, being state pollution control boards, have also at times resorted to legal action against the municipal corporations. I mean, this is a thing which at times people don't understand. In fact, even government bodies don't understand. They are like, okay, we are a government agency. How come you are taking a legal action against us? We are not just there to regulate the private sector. We are supposed to ensure that government bodies are doing their jobs efficiently when it comes to waste management. In fact, there have been provisions where the prosecutions of municipal commissioners, even deputy commissioners, have been carried out by the pollution control boards in case they have failed to meet their duties when it comes to waste management. In fact, Honorable NGT in its original application 606 has given a really like detailed roles and responsibilities to the topmost bureaucrats of the state governments to ensure that waste crisis can be managed. In fact, currently, even this week, we were formulating a new district environment plan for all the districts of my state, which will be compiled and will be updated so that we can have best possible scenario for the waste management. So yeah, even at the point of source of generation, the households, a lot of waste management practices are found lacking over there. People hardly know about segregation. People don't know what can be composted, what can be recycled. So this basic awareness, even this is lacking. And once we have it, we can actually go a long way in ensuring that we have efficient waste management practices in India. In fact, all the nations that have a robust waste management system, most of them are Scandinavian nations or Western European nations. What they did right is that they started managing the waste right at the source. In Europe, you are fined for not having properly segregated waste. So the best way to manage the waste is not to create it. This is something we really need to work upon. And as far as the government agencies are going, yeah, they are working. They are trying to improve the situation. But this is a nation of 1.2 billion people. If citizens are not with us, government can't provide a solution.
Yeah, that is really problematic. I can see, like, you said something which is really making sense. If the people, even if you try to tell people that please don't use a plastic or use it and reuse it, still people don't listen to us because they think that government will do something. Like every year Mumbai is getting flooded, but if you told them that don't throw the plastic in the gutter or everywhere, they will not listen. The normal people and the NGOs are working. There are, like, literally after the pandemic, there is so much awareness. People are doing their part, but still there will be like 50% people are doing it, but not in the good ways.
Yeah, and the remaining 50% are just like blaming it on the, like, you know, governments and municipalities. And I can totally see how, like, the State Pollution Control Board serves as an important link in tying the people and the government together.
Yeah.
I have to, like, explain this to the people. I mean, ignoring environmental crisis is like driving a vehicle, driving a car with a flat tire. I mean, you are saying that I have to reach my destination quicker, so I can't stop and repair this or change this tire. But eventually it will get to you and it will halt your journey. So, I mean, at times people find it difficult to reconcile development with your environment. But if you're ignoring it, then eventually it will catch up with you. Like we are seeing in Mumbai, like the floods in southern India, with the cyclones in the
different. You cannot run away from the mistakes which you are doing or which you have done in the past.
So next question would be, India has a strong informal sector dealing with the waste collection and segregation. Do you think PCBS can do any part in empowering this sector?
As a nation, we have always believed in Jugaad. And if you look at the informal sector, that's a perfect encapsulation of this word called Jugaad.
Yeah,
we have got these markets in New Delhi of these large e-waste markets where you get almost a lot of e-waste is being brought up and it's being handled by people who don't have any formal education. They don't have a degree in electrical engineering, but what they have is practical transferable skills and they're working with that. Now, the issue is that is this market is segmented and it's highly fragmented currently.
Okay.
So what usually happens is that the e-waste, it contains a lot of your harmful metals. I will like to tell you about one case study. There's this city called Moradabad in UP, and it's on the banks of a river called Ram Ganga, which is a major tributary to the Ganga. And as we all aware that Ganga holds a special place in India, and government has spent millions invested a lot in ensuring that this river gets cleaned up. What we saw in the Moradabad when Central Pollution Control Board did a study is that a lot of open burning of e-waste components such as circuit boards and wires have literally choked that city. A lot of e-waste from all over India is being brought up over there. And this e-waste contains your metals such as copper and even traces of silver and gold. Now, this haphazard handling of e-waste and trying to recover metals from it have resulted in serious contamination of groundwater, soil and water bodies in the city of Moradabad. Same situation is playing out in another city called Jamnagar, which is also a brass industry. And if you look at our capital, in New Delhi, I think it lies in the northeastern parts of New Delhi. There is this hub called Silampur. And it's a major e-waste hub over there.
Yeah.
Now, the thing you notice over here is that when you are taking care of e-waste, almost a large section of the e-waste is not hazardous to handle. It's only a tiny fraction. I mean, if you have to make it simple, if you have a 100 kg washing machine, then just 50 to 60 gram of circuits involved over there will lead to serious environmental damage and would need proper supervision to manage. Otherwise, the other components can easily be recycled, like glass, metal, plastic, etc. So I believe rather than clamping down on this informal sector, if somehow they can be aggregated, they can be put under one roof or one area, and they can be provided with common pollution control devices. For example, for the fumes, you can give them common baghouse filter, you can give them a common wet scrubber, and you can give them a vent from where all those fumes will be directed towards that wet scrubber before going to the stack, then a lot of problem can be solved. The issue with pollution control boards is that right now we are only a regulatory body. We can just stop the people, but we can't factor in much with the policy making. That's an unfortunate reality of our nation, that people who are working on the ground, who know the ground reality, don't have a say in the top-notch level of decision making. I mean, like, no disrespect to any senior bureaucrat, but if you're sitting in New Delhi and you're trying to make up rules for the rest of the India, then things can go haywire pretty easily. And currently in India, the 95% of the e-waste is being handled by informal sector. So if somehow we can ensure that only if the parts that are dangerous of the electronic waste, if they can be somehow brought under the ambit and can be regularized, and maybe with passage of time, we can try to cover the other areas, then a lot of problem would be solved. These people who are currently working in these e-waste industries and the waste collection industries, they are called as kabaddi walas. They are treated badly with abrasion and derision. No one takes them seriously. But they have the inside knowledge of this industry. And any government program that is aiming to be successful needs to factor in these people. So we're going to solve a two-way problem if we can somehow aggregate them and put them under one common roof. We can create a lot of employment, and we can have a environmentally friendly and sustainable solution to the electronic waste in India.
Okay.
Amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that information. I'm sure like this will be helpful for many of the listeners. So moving on, Hardeep, I would like to ask you, what are your thoughts about the implementation of EPR rules for brands? Does it lag somewhere, or is CPCB on the right track? So for those of you who are not aware of EPR, I would just like to state that. So EPR in the field of waste management is nothing but extended producer responsibility. This is a strategy to add all of the environmental costs which are associated with the product throughout the product's life cycle to the market price of that product. So what are your thoughts on this?
Well, EPR came up during 2016 when we have our new plastic waste rules and e-waste rules coming up. Mm. And what it essentially there was, as you rightly said, it meant that manufacturers must facilitate the collection and return of their products after the end of their life cycle. In fact, recently, I'm not sure if people are aware about it, the Central Pollution Control Board imposed almost 1 crore fine on Patanjali and PepsiCo, because they were not able to manage their plastic waste efficiently. Right now, there's no better way to say it, but it's been nearly 5 years since this came up, these rules came up, but yet there's a lot to be done on this aspect. One new phenomena which we recently saw coming up is that there is this concept of producer responsibility organizations called as PROs came up in 2018. And now what companies did is that they outsourced their EPR targets to the PROs. So essentially, PROs are supposed to collect those waste, and the companies that are creating those products, they will support the PROs financially. It's like they have outsourced their work to the PROs. But the issue with PROs is that even they are purchasing most of their waste from the informal sector, from the rag pickers or the kabaddi walas or the aggregators, like we talked about.
Yeah.
Now, what has happened is that there is this high possibility that this will actually give rise to the more fragmentation of the market, where rather than these waste being channeled through the urban local bodies, the municipal corporations, it will continue to be handled by the informal sector. And at the very core, the EPR can only be well implemented and successful when we have a source segregation in place. The only countries which have done good with EPR are coincidentally also the same countries that have been good with the solid waste management by the virtue of good segregation at the source level. So same nations, your Scandinavian nations, your nations like Sweden, Norway, and if you want to talk about Asia, then I think Japan, they are the ones who have done a pretty good role over here. Another thing about EPR is that, especially when you talk about the electronic waste, the reason I'm discussing electronic waste more is that these days, the products are having a shorter lifespan. If you look at it, every 6 months, you saw a company coming up with its new flagship, and people are disposing of their products way earlier than they used to. The consumerist, the capitalist culture of America has seeped in into even the Asian nations. And companies are doing lip service. For example, recently we have seen that Apple started this trend that we are not going to give charger just because we want to save the planet. I mean, that's not just reasonable. That's just you're trying to score brownie points.
If that's greenwashing, totally greenwashing.
True. If companies are actually serious about ensuring that their e-waste is handled properly, what they can do is that they can say, okay, you are using iPhone 12 right now. Tomorrow, if iPhone 13 comes up, what you can do is that you can bring back your iPhone 12 and I'm going to give you this kickback. You're going to get this 20% off, or you're going to get this benefit. And for any nation like India that is price sensitive, these kind of dividends will automatically lead people to ensure that they are bringing back their e-waste to the right center. They are bringing their products back to the right place. One thing which government can do, and we are doing, what I'm doing in my district, the area which I am in charge of, is that we are trying to ensure that we can somehow create quarterly or monthly collection points. We can create some collection points where people can bring and put their electronic waste. And from there, it can further be channeled either to the manufacturers or to the people who are in this business of dismantling and recycling the e-waste. And if you want to check up with the nearest e-waste recycler unit in your area, you can go to Central Pollution Control Board website, and they have this list of the e-waste recyclers in India. So what you can do is that next time when you want to dispose an electronic product, it doesn't have to be a smartphone. It can even be something elementary like a TV remote. You can go and dump it at the nearest e-waste collection center. And from there, it will be ensured that it's handled in a scientific and environment-friendly manner. So I think that can go a long way in ensuring that the EPRs work in better fashion.
So I heard that you are organizing the information and education communication activities and mass awareness program. Hardik, which are the strategy do you use and what are the challenges do you face? Because the rural area, we can say there are like a lot of people who don't understand the English language, they don't understand the website, they don't understand many of the things which we, the educator or the people in the, like who are literally educated, they can go through it. So how it is like, it is hard to you to tell them that waste, do the waste management, what is a waste, and these are the things you are saying that go to the website and drop that mobile or anything in this location, like how you are carrying out this awareness campaign and how you are changing their behavior pattern.
Well, Pratiksha, you rightly pointed out that there is a whole section of India that is that converse in their vernacular languages. For that, what SPCBs are doing is that they are trying to carry out these programs, these awareness activities in the local vernacular languages. And with my experience, I can confirm that the best way to get information transmitted to the village level is to involve the people from the village.
Yeah.
And if you want to involve people from the village, I mean, if you look at it, the village have this robust panchayat system in India. And each panchayat has a sarpanch. So when you are involving people from that panchayat or that sarpanch, and you are making him aware about this thing, then it becomes easier to trickle down this to even the lowest strata of the society. And fortunately, India has seen massive internet consumption, and internet has truly become a common commodity, a common service that almost everyone can avail of. I personally feel is that you need to leverage the technology when you want to transmit these to the people. We have seen all the political parties using social media for their campaigns. Unfortunately, we have not seen a similar enthusiasm when it comes to transmission of information, especially concerning the environment sector, to the people. So we try to carry out a lot of programs on the ground level with the villagers, with the farmers. For example, whenever there's this stubble burning issues, we try to involve the people from agricultural department. And since they have a lot of ground level staff, we always request them that it will be way better if your people who are working at the ground level in that particular village, he or she is the one to transmit this stubble burning problem to the farmers. Because we might be an alien face to them, but you are someone who they interact on a daily basis, who they come to for availing different government subsidies, for taking benefits of different schemes, for taking compensation in case of crop damage, So if you are the one telling them about this thing, then it's going to be way more beneficial. So it's always good to involve someone who the people at a village level can identify with when you are trying to impart something to them. And when it comes to imparting to the urban, the educated India, I think involving social media is always a great strategy. Unfortunately, even I tried to get it done with my SPCB. We tried to hire a kind of like a PR firm, a public relation firm that can do it in a better manner, because we are already overburdened with a lot of responsibilities. I mean, I also have to go against the violators. I also have to put ensure that they are put behind the bars. So at times it can become really difficult for your officers to do this task. So if somehow government can form these separate PR firms or create a separate department for this, then it will be way more beneficial. We have these public relation department in the government, but they are working in a very rudimentary fashion. They are still stuck in your 90s and 2000s. I mean, if you want to change the behavior, then you need to leverage the modern tools that are available to you. I mean, social media has manipulated millions of people. So why can't you use that same force for the good?
True. Amazing. This is really eye-opener for me. So the next question, what would be the one piece of advice you would like to pass on to aspiring environmental engineers?
As me and Prateek were discussing about this field right in the beginning, for a nation like ours, environment is still not as big as a priority it should be. And I can't exactly blame the people. I mean, when the Western world was developing, environment was not even a major issue. There was a time when if you see smoke coming up from a factory, it was seen as a sign of development, that we are moving towards a better tomorrow, we are creating jobs for the people. So it was quite late that these environmental movements started. And by then, the West has already progressed. They have already created their economy. Now the problem with people from India and relatively poor nations is that they also have a fundamental right to grow. I mean, we can't keep them in poverty. We can't keep them without electricity. We can't keep them without water or basic sanitation. So this is something we need to understand, that people will demand growth and we need to deliver them the growth. We can't act in a very idealistic manner like a nation like Norway, and we can just like put some severe hard conditions on the industries or on the small businesses, that if you don't do this, then we're going to close you down. We're going to put you behind the bars. And unfortunately, this is happening. So what we need to rather do, rather than just hitting people with a stick, is that we need to show them that how can you grow in a sustainable manner. And that's where environmental engineering comes up. These days, I mean, all the big firms are having their separate environment departments. India is supposed to meet its renewable energy targets and is pushing a lot in that way. So just like in America, there was a time when we had this Alaska gold mine rush. So it is a time where we will soon see renewable energy rush coming up. So if you want to do environmental engineering, then rest assured, be sure that there are going to be a lot of opportunities in this field. But you really need to hustle if you want to grab those opportunities. Right now, they are pretty limited. In the future, they will grow. So you can be the early bird that catches a lot of worms. But unfortunately, the current Indian education system, it doesn't focus a lot upon the skill set. So if you're someone who wants to do a degree in environmental engineering, I would suggest you to not restrict yourself to the world of academia and books. Classroom can teach you very little when it comes to environment. I mean, environment is what is out there. So you need to go out. I would rather recommend any environmental engineering aspirant to start doing internship right from their first year. In fact, if you want, working with your pollution control board's regional office can be a pretty good area. You will get to see all the environmental legislations being implemented, and you will be in touch with whatever latest is happening in this sector. So if I just have to boil it down to two things. Number one is that there are going to be a lot of opportunities, but it will take some time for them to manifest. It might take 5 to 10 years even. Number two, you need to focus upon the real world rather than the world of academia. So don't be afraid to get your hands dirty. You will have to brave the wind. You will have to bear the heat. I mean, we have to work out there in 45 degrees Celsius near our industry's furnace while doing the sampling. So be ready for all that. But if you can give all this, then believe me, the results will be Amazing.
And me being in the same shoes, I like agree with you. And though, like, you know, there is not much awareness about this field, especially, I mean, there are awareness about environmental studies and sustainability consulting and courses in India, but having this in engineering branch is like very limited to, like, you know, few states only. So my advice to everyone would be here, like, just, like, you know, look out for opportunities that are out there. You can start, like, you know, in order to know more about this field, what I did was, like, you know, trying to get into internships in the environmental organization. So just, there's a whole, like, abundant amount of information on the web. You just go there, apply, and you'll figure out what your interests are. So it's like the opportunities are there, but only you have to be really wear that environmental lenses and just scrutinize everything which is present on the web. And secondly, you'll definitely feel good once you start doing what you are passionate about. Don't think about others, like what I thought, like, you can definitely change your field. There's no hard deadline or the roadmap which you have to follow. You can definitely switch your field at any point of the time. So just don't think about others and do what you feel makes you, like, you know, which makes you happy.
Yeah, truly. And the answer was very apt, and you are really good motivator. And I think few of them who are trying to achieve the success like you did, like, you have literally gone through from the, like, I can see that you have contributed so many projects, like a feasibility of using pine leaves as the reinforcement in concrete, and everything, like academic report in the effects of meteorological conditions on air pollution and study air pollutants, trains in Shimla. So you have done quite a great work in the environmental field, and you are quite experienced. So I think you can be really a great motivator. You can give lectures in the college and motivate people who are literally doing mechanical engineering, because I saw that a lot of people currently, when I started my podcast, even Pratik and the other people whom I am talking to, they were doing engineering with the mechanical and civil. But when I told them that, you know, guys, you can do something in green building and shift your career to the sustainability and do something good for the environment, and they literally MBA, like Pratik is doing MS in New York. So everything is changed when you decide to do something positive, and you literally give them hope and really great advice. And I'm really glad you are here
So since we are, by the virtue of being working over in this organization, we are in touch with most of the industries that are working in this area. So just for your listeners, in case if anyone is looking for any particular assistance or any direction, and if you're looking for any kind of internship, then they can feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. I get a lot of student messages, and I always try to help them out. So if there's anything I can do, I will be like happy to assist you.
Thank you so much, Hardik, for this. I'm sure, like, many of our listeners will, who are trying to get into this field, this opportunity, they can grab this opportunity and really move forward with your guidance. Thank you for that.
Thank you so much. So yeah, now let's play some interesting games. And these questions are taken from the strategies for sustainability quiz from profros.com and from cnn.com. For the link in the bio, if you are you would like to play along, and let's go. So let's start with an easy one. Which of this will do the most to reduce our landfills? First, recycling. Second, zoning. Third, wilderness protection.
It has to be recycling. As I said, it's always better to not put the waste out there rather than try to be how to manage it.
You're right. Yeah. The correct answer is one, recycling. So moving on to the next one, which is the most important thing we need to do properly in order to use our land? So your options are A, return it to indigenous people, B, protect and restore tropical forest, and C, plant more bamboos.
I think the second one would be the best strategy out there. I mean, you can have a lot of discussion over there, but I think the tropical forests are the lungs of our planet. especially yeah. Amazon rainforest. So I think working over there would be a great thing.
True. So while planting bamboo is like super important, and returning to our land to indigenous people, protecting and restoring tropical rainforests, all of this can save over 459 million cars. So I feel like, you know, when all of these club together, they are bound to make an impact, and they're equally important.
You know, I want to share this interesting trivia over here, if you allow me. With this
question. Go for it.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, what happens is that when you talk about environment, most people think of forest and trees. And they think that if we somehow do a reforestation, then the whole crisis will go away. I wish it was true. And reforestation do plays an important part. But there's a study, I'm not able to recall the exact author currently, that if somehow, hypothetically, you can divert all the land that was transferred to agriculture or other purpose from agriculture revolution. So agriculture revolution happened around 10,000 years back. And if somehow you can transfer all that all the land we have back to its original form, even then you can only save, you can only stop the climate change till at best 2040. So it will buy you barely 20 years.
Just some amount of time.
Yeah. So no matter what you are doing, reforestation is always one part of the solution, but it's not the whole solution of the equation. Reforestation cannot come as an excuse to not reduce our emissions and move towards green tech.
So improving education opportunity can help. So you have to tell me multiple choice questions. So improving education opportunity can help. First, improve family planning option. Second, reduce poverty. Third, increase family size. Fourth one, prevent destruction of natural.
It's a little dicey one, but I guess reducing population as well as the fourth one, if like protecting the natural habitats, they both will go a long way. If I have to choose, I think protecting natural habitats is the way to go. Because when you're protecting them, population control has to be there. Because otherwise, people will be encroaching upon more and more land. So we'll go with the fourth option.
The prevent destruction of natural habitats plus improve family planning option would be the great, because people will think about every precautions they can take, right?
Yeah, if you look at it, it's what Thanos did in the Avengers. I mean, like, if you have a lot of people, the planet's obviously going to suffer. So, I mean.
Right. So, and of course, reducing poverty will come along with the education. But the opportunities in the job sectors and everywhere are lacking. Currently, people are thinking about if you are literally master's and PhD, still people are paying less to organization are paying less to the students and employers. So that is the main I can't see the possibility, but that is the lacking point. So great. So next we ask this question to every guest.
So this kind of question we ask to every guest, like, you know, just to like, you know, understand their thought process, and it always like it is sure to inspire the people, our listeners. So what do you think what would be the one word advice you would give to your younger self, like 5 years ago or 10 years ago?
I think if you are giving any advice to your younger self that can set off a chain reaction that can actually prevent you from becoming who you are today. So given a choice of going back to my younger self, I would just like to see him. I would just like to observe him, but I think I won't like to interfere. I mean, it's like that Heisenberg uncertainty principle. I mean, if you are like trying to locate that particular electron, so it's going to change its position. So I think if you try to interfere, you might set off a completely different path. So no, I would not like to give any piece of advice to him, to the Hardik who was 5 years there.
So basically it's like go with the flow. What you're doing, just keep doing.
True. Yeah. I mean, awesome. If it's meant to be, then it will manifest.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite sentences.
Okay, so do you have any role models, especially someone who has been a motivation for you to be in the environmental field and whatever you are doing currently?
I think the Science communicator always play a major role in life of any individual who moves towards the field of science. For example, you had people like Richard Feynman, you have people like Carl Sagan, you have people like Neil deGrasse Tyson who try to simplify the science for the masses. And I think if somehow we can do that, we can make science more enjoyable for the next generation. So it can have a lot of positive impacts over there. So yeah, I would always like to rate the people, the different scientists of different eras as someone like role models. I wish we as a society valued our scientists and engineers more than we do, rather than valuing TikTokers and Instagrammers. I wish the world where the scientists are the real celebrities.
Yeah. Thanks. Thank you so much. All the question with such enthusiasm. I really doubt your perspective about every thing, and which is really different from the other people I listen to. And it is surely gonna be very good and educational podcast for the people who are listening to the first time, who don't know about PCCB and everything which you do in your state. And I hope people will get to know about you, because you are such an inspiration for all of the people who are literally looking for the inspiration. And I'm really glad that you are here with us on this podcast.
Thank you for the lovely words. It was great to be here. In fact, you two are doing a fabulous job in taking this sustainability podcast up. I'm sure a whole generation of people are gonna get motivated by this, and it might lead to some kind of wonderful results which even you didn't anticipate when you started.
That's true. So great, that was a fun episode, and we had a great time with you, Hardik, and we hope you had too. So that's it for the today's episode, guys. Do check out our social media handles on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, and everywhere else. We are having some amazing content coming right up. Hardik, I just wanted to ask you that, where can our listeners find you?
You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me on Facebook. I have a Twitter account, but that's anonymous, so I don't like
it. LinkedIn and Facebook.
Yeah, LinkedIn and Facebook are always over there to connect with me.
Amazing. Also, for the listeners, and also you, Hardik, don't forget to visit our website. It's www.sustainability10podcast.com. It's a podcast with an S in the end. So we know that there is always scope for improvement. So let us know your suggestions, and if you find this podcast fun and informative, share it within your circle.
Yeah, and that's a wrap for now. See you guys on our next episode. Till then, stay safe. Think sustainable
and act responsible.
Thank you.
Bye.